All right, welcome back to Story Time with David and Mommy. David is getting some Legos in the other room. We are continuing with Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson. This is Chapter 7, I Go to Sea in the Brig, Covenant of Desert. I came to myself in darkness, in great pain, bound hand and foot and deafened by unfamiliar noises. There sounded in my ears a roaring of water as of a huge dam, mill dam, the thrashing of heavy sprays, the thundering of the sails, and the shrill cries of seamen. The whole world now heaved giddily up, and now rushed giddily downward, and so sick and hurt was I in body, and my mind so much confounded, that it took me a long while, chasing my thoughts up and down, and ever stunned again by a fresh stab of pain, to realize that I must be lying somewhere bound in the belly of that unlucky ship, and that the wind must have strengthened to a gale. With the clear perception of my plight, there fell upon me a blackness of despair, a horror of remorse at my own folly, and a passion of anger at my uncle that once more bereft me of my senses. When I returned again to life, the same uproar, the same confused and violent movements shook and deafened me, and presently, to my other pains and distresses, there was added the sickness of an unusual landsman on the sea. In that time of my adventurous youth, I suffered many hardships, but none was... Oh, wonderful, honey. So he just woke up on the ship, and they're in the middle of a storm.
What happened when he was asleep?
It doesn't say. It just says that he woke up, and now they're in the ship, probably below deck, and they're in the middle of a storm.
If he was a ghost, like, he would be probably tied to the mast.
Could be, yeah. In that time of my adventurous youth, I suffered many hardships, but none that was so crushing to my mind and body, or lit by so few hopes, as these first hours aboard the brig. I heard a gunfire, and supposed the storm had proved too strong for us, and we were firing signals of distress. The thought of deliverance, even by death in this deep sea, was welcome to me. Yet it was no such matter. But, as I was afterwards told, a common habit of the captain's, which I here set down to show that even the worst man may have his kindlier side. We were then passing, it appeared, within some miles of Desert, where the brig was built, and where old Mrs. Hosian, the captain's mother, had come some years before to live, and whether outward or inward bound, the Covenant was never suffered to go by that place by day without
Mommy,
a gun fired and colors shown.
Mm-hmm. I have some kind of thing in my belly button.
Oh.
Sand.
Oh.
In my belly button.
Well, you could get a little cup of water and try to get it out. Or you can soak in the tub and try to get out. It'll probably come out when we swim, honey.
Okay. No.
I had no measure of time. Day and night were alike in that ill-smelling cavern of the ship's bowels where I lay, and the misery of my situation drew out the hours to double. How long, therefore, I lay waiting to hear the ship split upon some rock or to feel her reel head foremost into the depths of the sea, I have not the means of computation. But sleep at length stole from me the consciousness of sorrow. I was awakened by the light of a hand lantern shining in my face. A small man of about 30, with green eyes and a tangle of fair hair, stood looking down at me.
"Well," said he, "how goes it?"
I answered by a sob, and my visitor then felt my pulse and temples and set himself to wash and dress the wound upon my scalp.
"Hoy," said he, "a sore dunt. What, man, cheer up! The world's not done. You've made a bad start of it, but you'll make a better. Have you had any meat?"
I said I could not look at it, and thereupon he gave me some brandy and water in a tin pannikin, and left me once more to myself. The next time he came to see me, I was lying betwixt sleep and waking, my eyes wide open in the darkness, the sickness quite departed, but succeeded by a horrid giddiness and swimming that was almost worse to bear. I ached besides in every limb, and the cords that bound me seemed to be of fire. The smell of the hole in which I lay seemed to have become a part of me, and during the long interval since his last visit I had suffered tortures of fear, now from the scurrying of the ship's rats that sometimes pattered on my very face, and now from the dismal imaginings that may haunt the bed of fever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's talking about how he is still, he's tied up in the bottom of the ship, and there's a sailor who came to see him and offered him some food and gave him a little water and brandy, which is like an alcohol.
Yeah.
And then he left again, and he's... What, hon?
Israel Hands wanted brandy.
Oh, Israel Hands wanted brandy, yeah. So, and then the sailor left him again, and now he came back, and what he's saying is that he had kind of almost hallucinations, like he saw things that weren't there, or he was extremely frightened because of the ship's rats that were running on his face, and of things like hallucinations that can happen when you're really sick.
What's hallucination?
Hallucination is when you see something that is not actually there. So your brain tricks you into thinking something is there when it's not. That's a hallucination.
So you'll be all ready to punch?
Yeah, so for example, people, when they go into the hospital, sometimes they have hallucinations if they're really sick. So they might see things like bugs crawling on the wall that aren't there, or ghosts floating around that aren't there. Those are hallucinations.
Or zombies.
Yeah, possible.
Or a skeleton pie.
I guess so.
Or a giant pie squid.
That too. The glimmer.
Or some clone troopers trying to kill him.
The glimmer of the lantern as the trap opened shone in like the heaven's sunlight, and though it only showed me the strong dark beams of the ship that was my prison, I could have cried aloud for gladness. The man with the green eyes was the first to descend the ladder, and I noticed that he came somewhat unsteadily. He was followed by the captain. Neither said a word, but first set to and examined me, and dressed my wound as before, while Hosian looked me in the face with an odd black look.
"Now, sir, you see for yourself," said the first.
Oh, wait, that is not Hosian. That's the other guy.
"Now, sir, you see for yourself," said the first. "A high fever, no appetite, no light, no meat. You see for yourself what that means."
"I am no conjurer, Mr. Ryach," said the captain.
"Give me your leave, sir," said Ryach. "You've a good head upon your shoulders and a good Scotch tongue to ask with. But I will leave you no manner of excuse. I want that boy taken out of this hole and put in the forecastle."
"What ye may want, sir, is a matter of concern to nobody but yourself," returned the captain. "But I can tell ye which is to be. Here he is, here he shall bide."
"Admitting that you have been paid in proportion," said the other, "I will crave leave humbly to say that I have not. Paid I am, and none too much, to be the second officer of this old tub, and you can very well if I do my best to earn it, but I was paid for nothing more."
"If you could hold your backhand from the tin pan, Mr. Ryach, I would have no complaint to make of ye," returned the skipper, "and instead of asking riddles, I make bold to say that ye would keep your breath to cool your porridge. Will be required on deck," he added in a sharper tone, and set one foot upon the ladder.
But Mr. Ryach caught him by the sleeve.
"Admitting that you've been paid to do a murder," he began. Hosian turned upon him in a flash.
"What's that?" he cried. "What kind of talk is that?"
"It seems it is the talk that you can understand," said Mr. Ryach, looking him steadily in the face.
"Mr. Ryach, I have sailed with ye 3 cruises, replied the captain. "And all that time, sir, you should have learned to know me. I'm a stiff man and a dour man. But for what ye say, then now, fie, fie, it comes from a bad heart and a black conscience. If you say the lad will die..."
"Aye, he will," said Mr. Ryach. "Well, sir, is that not enough?"
"Is not that enough?" said Hosian. "Flit him where you please."
Flit means shift him, or move him where you please. Thereafter the captain ascended the ladder, and I, who had lain silent throughout this strange conversation, beheld Mr. Ryach turn after him and bow as low to his knees in what was plainly a spirit of derision. Even in my then state of sickness, I perceived 2 things, that the mate was touched with liquor, as the captain hinted, and that, drunk or sober, he was like to prove a valuable friend.
Well,
5 minutes after my bonds were cut, I was hoisted up on a man's back, carried to the forecastle, and laid in a bunk on some sea blankets, where the first thing I did was to lose my senses. It was a blessed thing indeed to open my eyes again upon daylight, and to find myself in the society of men. The forecastle was a roomy enough place, set all about with berths, in which the men of the watch below were seated smoking or lying down asleep. The day being calm and the wind fair, the scuttle was open, and not only the good daylight, but from time to time, as the ship rolled, a dusty beam of sunlight shone in and dazzled and delighted me. I had no sooner moved, moreover, than one of the men brought me a drink of something healing, which Mr. Ryach had prepared, and bade me lie still, and I should soon be well again. There were no broken bones, he explained.
A clour on the head was nothing, men, said he. It was me that gave it ya.
Here I lay for the space. He's talking about how he was hit on the head when he first got on the ship. And then this guy says, oh, you're going to be fine. A hit on the head isn't anything to worry about. And it was me who gave you that hit on the head. That's what the guy said. Here I lay for the space of many days a close prisoner, and not only got my health again, but came to know my companions. They were a rough lot indeed, as sailors mostly are, being men rooted out of all the kindly parts of life, and condemned to toss together on the rough seas, with masters no less cruel. There were some among them that had sailed with the pirates, and had seen things it would be a shame pirates. Even to speak of. Mm-hmm. Some were men that had run from the king's ships. Well, there were pirates around in the time that this is set, this book.
That book was written?
Mm-hmm. And went with a halter around their necks, of which they made no secret. So he's saying that there are pirates and...
Are there still pirates?
Are there still pirates? Yeah. There are in certain parts of the world, yeah.
Like where?
In certain parts of Africa. There are still pirates. There was a big problem with Somali pirates many years ago. And there, you know, so it's harder, I think, for people to, you know, do piracy right now. It's really just, you know, stealing at sea. That's all piracy is. You go up to somebody else's boat and you steal their stuff. So they're just thieves. They just steal at sea instead of on land.
Like they're just robbers, mm-hmm. but with expensive clothing.
With the boat.
That they steal in a pirate ship with an expensive flag.
Mm.
And a whole bunch of loot.
We like to pretend to be pirates, but we wouldn't want to actually be real pirates because they were really bad guys.
No.
No. Like Long John. So he's saying that on the ship there were former pirates, and there were also people who were former prisoners of the king who had run away.
The king who ran mm-hmm. away?
They ran away. They escaped from being prisoners of the king. That's what they mean by saying some were men that had run from the king's ships and went with a halter around their necks, of which they made no secret. And all, as the saying goes, were at a word and a blow with their best friends. Yet I had not many days shut up with them before I began to be ashamed. Shut up is a way of saying that you are locked up with somebody. Like you're stuck in a room with someone.
Oh, I thought the word shut up.
No, we use it in a different... Yeah, we use that in a different way to mean hell, be quiet. But in this book, it means... to
be locked up
with somebody, like be stuck, be trapped. Yet I had not been many days shut up with them before I began to be ashamed of my first judgment when I had drawn away from them at the ferry pier, as though they had been unclean beasts.
Mom, there's one place in Lego Batman and real Batman. There's one place called Alcatraz, where all his enemies hang out.
Mm.
The penguin to poison ivy.
Mm. Well, Alcatraz is a real place. It's a real prison.
Well,
it's not a prison anymore, but it's a real place.
Well, How was it prison? It's like the same thing, but in Lego.
Oh, interesting.
It was Batman in Badass.
Yeah, I'm going to keep reading, okay?
Okay.
Yet I had not been many days shut up with them before I began to be ashamed of my first judgment when I had drawn away from them at the ferry pier, as though they had been unclean beasts. No class of man is altogether bad, but each has its own faults and virtues, and these shipmates of mine were no exception to the rule. Rough they were, sure enough, and bad, I suppose, but they had many virtues. They were kind when it occurred to them, simple even beyond the simplicity of a country lad like me, and had some glimmerings of honesty. There was one man, maybe of 40, that would sit on my berth side for hours and tell me of his wife and child.
Who's
berth side? Berth side means essentially at the side of his bed. He was a fisher that had lost his boat and had thus been driven to deep sea voyaging. Well, it is years ago now, but I have never forgotten him. His wife, who was young by him, as he often told me, waited in vain to see her man return. He would never again make the fire for her in the morning, nor keep the bairn when she was sick. Indeed, many of these poor fellows, as the event proved, were upon their last cruise, and deep seas and cannibal fish received them, and it is a thankless business to speak ill of the dead. Among other good deeds that they did,
they forgot one thing, cannibal squids.
Those two. Among other good deeds that they did, they returned my money, which had been shared among them, and though it was about a third short, I was very glad to get it, and hoped great good from it in the land I was going to. The ship was bound for the Carolinas, and you must not suppose that I was going to that place merely as an exile. The trade was even then much depressed. Since that, and with the rebellion of the colonies and the formation of the United States, it has, of course, come to an end. But in those days of my youth, white men were still sold into slavery on the plantations, and that was the destiny to which my wicked uncle had condemned me. The cabin boy Ransom, from whom I had first heard of these atrocities, came in at times from the roundhouse, where he berthed and served, now nursed a bruised limb in silent agony, now raving against the cruelty of Mr. Shawn. It made my heart bleed. It's one of the guys on the ship, honey. It made my heart bleed, but the men had a great respect for the chief mate, who was, as they said, the only seaman of the whole jing bang, and none of them a bad man when he was sober, and none such a bad man when he was sober. Indeed, I found that there was a strange peculiarity about our two mates. Mr. Ryach was a sullen, unkind, and harsh when he was sober, and Mr. Shawn would not hurt a fly except when he was drinking. I asked about the captain, but I was told drink made no difference upon that man of iron. I did my best in a small time allowed me to make something like a man, or rather, I should say, something like a boy of the poor creature, Ransom.
Boy. I'm a boy, something like me.
Yeah, something like you. But his mind was scarce truly human. He could remember nothing of the time before he came to sea, only that his father had made clocks, and he had a starling in the parlor, which could whistle the North Country. All else had been blotted out in these years of hardship and cruelties. He had a strange notion of the dry land, picked up from sailor stories, that it was a place where lads were put to some kind of slavery called a trade, and where apprentices were continually lashed and clapped into foul prisons. In a town, he thought every second person was a decoy, and every third house a place in which seamen would be drugged and murdered. To be sure, I would tell him how kindly I had myself been used upon that dry land he was so much afraid of, and how well fed and carefully taught by both my friends and my parents. And if he had been recently hurt, he would weep bitterly and swear to run away. But if he was in his usual crack-brained humor, or, still more, if he had a glass of spirits in the roundhouse, he would deride the notion.
Glass of spirits?
Yeah. So Ransom is a little boy, but he's like a sailor, and he's been on this ship for a long time. So even though he's a little boy, he's probably about 12, I think, he drinks like a man, and he acts like a bad guy. Yeah. A really hard, not a little boy. He's
Like me, no.
Yeah, he doesn't have fun like you. He's not happy like you. It was Mr.
How is he happy?
I don't know. It was Mr. Ryach, heaven forgive him, who gave the boy drink, and it was doubtless kindly meant, but besides that it was to ruin his health. Besides that it was to ruin to his health, it was the pitifulest thing in life to see this unhappy, unfriended creature staggering and dancing and talking he knew not what. Some of the men laughed, but not all. Others would grow as black as thunder, thinking perhaps of their own childhood or their own children, and bid him to stop that nonsense and think what he was doing. As for me, I felt ashamed to look at him, the poor child, and he still comes to me, comes about me in my dreams. All this time, you should know, the Covenant was meeting a continual headwinds and tumbling up and down against high seas, against head seas, so that the scuttle was almost constantly shut and the forecastle lighted only by a swinging lantern on a beam. There was constant labor for all hands. The sails had to be made and shortened every hour. The strain told on the men's temper, and there was a growl of quarreling all day long from berth to berth. And as I was never allowed to set my foot on deck, you can picture to yourselves how weary of life I grew to be, and how impatient for a change. And a change I was to get, as you shall hear. But I must tell you first of a conversation I had with Mr. Ryach, which put a little heart in me to bear my troubles. Getting him in a favorable stage of drink, for indeed he never looked near me when he was sober, I pledged him to secrecy and told him my whole story. He declared that it was like a ballad, then that he would do his best to help me, that I should have paper, pen, and ink, and write one line to Mr. Campbell and another to Mr. Rankellier, and that if I had told the truth, 10 to 1 he would be able, with their help, to pull me through and set me in my rights. "And in the meantime," says he, "keep your heart up. You're not the only one, I'll tell you that. There's many a man hoeing tobacco overseas that should be mounting his horse at his own door at home. Many and many. And life is all a variorum.
Variorum.
I don't know what that means either. And life is all a variorum at the best. Look at me. I'm the lad's son and more than half a doctor, and here I am, man Jack Tehosian." I thought it would be civil to ask him for his story. He whistled aloud. "Never had one," said he. "I liked fun, that's all."
Fun?
And he skipped out of the forecastle.
He liked fun?
He liked fun. That's the end of chapter 7. The next is chapter 8, The Roundhouse.
Can we read it?
Well, not today, sweetheart. We'll stop there for now because we have to do our math today. Okay, but you can have a break. Say bye, podcast listeners.
Sing your crapper, Roger, Roger. That's Battle Droid saying bye.
Oh, okay.
Sing your crapper, Roger, Roger.
Roger, Roger. Oh.